Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Tonight, our speaker is Teresa Bosa. Teresa has been a member at Canando for a number of years, and she's on our board of directors. Teresa, would you like to introduce yourself and let us know the title of your talk?
Hi, Bonnie and everybody else. Nice to see you. My name is Teresa. I think I know everybody on the call. And the title of my talk tonight is, I'll paste it on the chat, is At the Beach, Bahia, I Think of You. And I will be sharing a few things on the screen, so I might need your assistance, Bonnie, if something goes wrong. So I'd like to start tonight by reading a poem, and I will share it on the screen. Can you see it and hear me well?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So the name of the poem is Nothing Wants to Suffer by Danusha Lamiris. And it was sent to me recently by a friend of mine. So Nothing Wants to Suffer by Danusha Lamiris. Nothing wants to suffer, not the wind as it scrapes itself against the cliff, not the cliff being eaten slowly by the sea. The earth does not want to suffer the rough tread of those who do not notice it. The trees do not want to suffer the axe, nor see their sisters felled by root rot, mildew, rust. The coyote in its den. The puma stacking its prey. These two want ease and a tender animal in the mouth to take their hunger. An offering one hopes made quickly and without much suffering. The chair mourns an angry sitter. The lamp, a scalded moth. A table, the weight of years of argument. We know this, though we forget. Not the shark, nor the tiger, fang as they are, nor the worm, content in its windowless world of soil and stone. Nor the stone resting in its riverbed. The riverbed gazing up at the stars. Least of all, the stars, scones in their canopy, looking down at all of us, their offspring, scattered so far beyond reach. Nothing wants to suffer, by Danusha Lamiris. And tonight I would like to talk about suffering and freedom from suffering. You might remember that a few years ago they released a documentary about Nina Simone. The title of the documentary was What Happened, Miss Simone. And at one point in the documentary, Nina Simone says that there were a couple of times in stage when she really felt free, when she experienced complete and total freedom. And, you know, the memories of the documentary are very vague in my mind. But I remember when I watched it, and she said that, it really had an impact on me. And I still remember it. So what did she mean by that? And she answers that question in this short video clip that I'm going to share.
Well, what's freedom?
What's freedom? Yeah. Same thing as to you. You tell me.
Oh, you tell me. No. Because I've been talking for such
just
long.
Just a feeling. It's just a feeling. It's like, how do you tell somebody how it feels to be in love? How are you going to tell anybody who has not been in love how it feels to be in love? You cannot do it to save your life. You can describe things, but you can't tell them. But you know it when it happens. That's what I mean by free. I've had a couple of times on stage when I really felt free. And that's something else. That's feeling something else. Like all, I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear. If I could have that half of my life, no fear. Lots of children have no fear. That's the closest way, that's the only way I can describe it. That's not all of it, but it is something to really, really feel.
So freedom, freedom for Nina Simone is no fear. And I have been reflecting on that, on the idea of freedom and what is freedom and what is freedom to me? Did I ever feel truly free? Summers of childhood can be a good moment to feel free, or maybe not. And I would like to read a few paragraphs of a short story that I wrote for a fiction class that I took a while back. And the story is called Blue and Yellow. My happiest childhood memories are blue and yellow. Those are the colors of my summer breaks, the days spent at the beach with my friend Lupita. Her mother took us there. We spent most of the afternoons in the ocean, jumping the waves. After that, we sunbathed in the dunes, staring at the sun, or walked along the seaside. When the tide was low, we walked to the nearby island and told each other tales about the elves, monsters, and fairies who were living there. It was during one of those perfect summer days when I first felt guilty. There wasn't a single cloud in the sky. The breeze was gentle and warm. We were digging for cockles when I thought that my mother was probably still working at the bakery, making some cockle empanadas or apple cakes. My parents never went to the beach in the summer. That was the busiest season for them, when tourists visited our village and when they work harder. I still have a knot in the middle of my chest that doesn't let me fully enjoy the warm summer days. I haven't figured out how to undo it yet. So, the knot. And this past summer, I spent a lot of time at the same beach where I went with Lupita when I was a child. And it's a very beautiful place. Right before the pandemic started, I remember that I went to a yoga class here in the small town where I grew up with a childhood friend. And at the end of the class, the yoga teacher invited all of us to close the eyes and think about the most beautiful place we have ever been to. And my job as a journalist took me to many different places around the world, many beautiful places. But when the yoga instructor asked her question, I didn't think of any of those remote places. When she asked, think about the most beautiful place you have ever been to, the image that came to my mind was the image of the local beach, the beach of my childhood. And last summer, as I said, I spent many afternoons and early evenings there, swimming and walking. And there is a particular evening at the end of the summer that I really remember. It was a very peaceful evening. The sun was setting and reflecting in the water. The temperature was perfect. The sea was calm. And I was there by myself, swimming towards the sun. I was very aware of the intense beauty of the moment, grateful for it. And yet, I also felt there was something that prevented me from fully experiencing it, from being truly free. And I don't know very well how to explain it. Maybe a sense of separation. So soon after that beautiful evening at the beach, I learned about the Bahia Sutta from a Kanondo member. And I'll share it on the screen and read. It's a short sutta, but I will read only part of it. So Bahia Sutta. I have heard that on one occasion, the Blessed One was staying near Savatthi in Jetta's Grove. That's a difficult one. Anattapindika's monastery. Now, at that time, Bahia of the bark cloth was living in Suparaka by the seashore. He was worshipped, revered, honored, venerated, given homage, a recipient of robes, alms, food, lodgings, and medical requisites for the sick. Then, when he was alone in seclusion, this line of thinking arose to his awareness. Now, of those who in this world are arahants or have entered the path of arahantship, am I one? Then a devata who had once been a blood relative of Bahia of the bark cloth, compassionate, desiring his welfare, knowing with her own awareness the line of thinking that had arisen in his awareness, went to where he was staying and on arrival said to him, "You, Bahia, are neither an arahant nor have you entered the path of arahantship. You don't even have the practice whereby you could become an arahant or enter the path of arahantship. But who living in this world with its devas is an arahant or has entered the path to arahantship? Bahia, there is a city in the northern country named Savatthi. The Blessed One, an arahant, rightly self-awakened, is living there now. He is truly an arahant, and he teaches the Dhamma that leads to arahantship." Then Bahia, deeply chastened by the devata, left Suparaka right then and, in the space of one day and night, went all the way to where the Blessed One was staying near Sabati in Jetta's Grove. At that time, a large number of monks were doing walking meditation in the open air. He went to them and on arrival said, "Where, venerable sirs, is the blessed one staying, the Arahant, right self-awakened? We want to see him. He has gone into the town for alms." Then Bahiya, hurriedly leaving Jetta's Grove and entering Sabati, saw the Blessed One going for alms in Sabati. Calming, his sense at peace, his mind at peace, tranquil and poised in the ultimate sense, accomplished, trained, guarded, his sense restrained. A great one. Seeing him, he approached the Blessed One and, on reaching him, threw himself down with his head at the Blessed One's feet and said, "Teach me the Dhamma, O Blessed One. Teach me the Dhamma, O One well gone, that will be for my long-term welfare and bliss." Well, and he repeats this two more times. I think it was, this is a customary to ask for three times to the Buddha. So a third time, Bahiya said to the Blessed One, "But it is hard to know for sure what dangers there might be for the Blessed One's life or what dangers there might be for mine. Teach me the Dhamma, O Blessed One. Teach me the Dhamma, O One well gone. That will be for my long-term welfare and bliss." And then the Buddha said this to him. And this is the last paragraph I would like to read. "Then, Bahiya, you should train yourself thus. In reference to the sin, there will be only the sin. In reference to the heard, only the heard. In reference to the sensed, only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, only the cognized. That is how you should train yourself. When for you there will be only the seeing in reference to the seeing, only the heard in reference to the heard, only the sense in reference to the sense, only the cognized in reference to the cognized, then, Bahiya, there is no you in terms of that. When there is no you in terms of that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor yonder nor between the two. This, just this, is the end of stress," meaning the end of suffering. So I was very inspired by this sutra. And as I said, it happened soon after that beautiful evening at the beach. Afterwards, when I went to the beach, I thought about Bahiya and lying down on the water with my face looking at the sun. I thought, "Bahiya, I want to be free." And the last thing I would like to read is something that Krishnamurti says on his book, Reflections on the Self. And it's a little bit related to a question that Nick asked, I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, about, he expressed it very well, about leaving home, the need to leave home to really reach that state of effortless in our practice. So it takes a lot of effort to reach effortless. So in this book, K. Krishnamurti has an image that I found very inspiring. It has sustained me over the years. Sometimes I go back to that image, especially when I'm making a lot of effort in something. I think, oh, I wish my life was effortless. So in this book, in the chapter called, there's a chapter called Discontent. And in the chapter, in a paragraph of the chapter, he says, yesterday evening, I saw a boat going up the river at full sail, driven by the west wind. It was a large boat, heavily laden with firewood for the town. The sun was setting, and this boat against it. There was no effort, for the wind was doing all the work. Similarly, if each one of us could understand the problem of struggle and conflict, then I think we could be able to live effortlessly, happily, with a smile on our face. Thank you. Maybe now you can tell me what freedom means to you, and if you have ever fully experienced freedom, or anything else you want to share.
Don?
Yeah, hi, Teresa.
Hey, Don.
Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, just to join in with that, freedom, to me, when I think of freedom, I think of no beliefs. Not having any beliefs. You know, I find beliefs can be limiting. And most of my beliefs in my life have been limiting. So I would say no beliefs.
Thank you. How do you combine that with Buddhism? I know that you recently had your Yukai ceremony. So
I think that my experience is sort of at the core of Buddhism. Buddhism is about knowing, not believing, I think. And that, you know, but saying I think, it's my experience. You know, it's about knowing and not believing. Believing is only required when we don't know. And usually we invent our belief systems to protect us from what it is, what there is to know.
Yeah,
and so they limit us that way, that is make us unfree.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. This is about direct experience, right? Direct experience.
Yeah.
Thank you, Van.
Diane?
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Diane.
When I think of freedom, maybe it's that song I'm thinking of, Nothing Left to Lose. I think when we are too attached to things, and then we have fear that we might lose them, and then we're not free. Not that I've really experienced that, because I'm very attached to lots of things. But in terms of the beach, I can remember a day going to my favorite beach, local beach, and the tide was out. And way out. So you could walk among all of the little rocks and see all the little critters in the crannies. And I looked into this little hole in the rock, and there was this tiny little crab with these, you know how they have the little eyes that extend out? Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to sit there forever and watch this little crab coming in and out of this little hole. And I was so totally lost that I just felt like I was part of that tide pool and part of the ocean and hearing the surf move around me. And I did feel at that moment a sense of freedom because I just forgot everything else. I was totally immersed in that moment with that little crab and the ocean and the sounds. It seems similar to the feelings that you're expressing, to be totally, totally present, fully present, letting go of everything else.
Yes, absolutely.
So thank you for that.
Thank you, Diane. I think so too. I think that moment at the beach, I could feel that there was something, I was close to it, but there was something still preventing me from being fully free. So I could just almost. Thank you. Mike.
Thank you for your talk, Teresa. It was very inspiring. For me, freedom, or when I act freely, is when I am able to control my action and then endorse it with different levels of my value system or consciousness. So, for example, if I see somebody who is in need of food, I'm able to act so I can give them food and then endorse that action in a moral sense. So I am able to choose that I have given them food because I think this is the right thing to do. Hmm. So it's a first order desire, a desire to help somebody achieve what they need, and then an endorsement, a moral endorsement of that action. As opposed to sort of something I make when I act non-freely, it's when I act and then I'm unable to sort of endorse that action with sort of my moral value system, such as if I was to, I don't know, do a addictive drug, that sort of action, I couldn't necessarily endorse saying that's the right thing to do. That's what I want to do. That's not wholehearted. When I act wholeheartedly, different sort of levels of my value system and consciousness are in unity. That to me is freedom or freedom of action. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing, Mike. Dan?
Thank you for the talk. I think the question of freedom is kind of unfathomable. And I think to the time, a time, and maybe it's, you know, a time of freedom for me was I was hitchhiking and I was probably about 19 or 20 years old. It was a sunny morning. And I'd had success, and I was hiking. I was hitchhiking from the Northeast down to Florida, and I made it as far as South Carolina, I think. And that morning, it was just glorious. And I had luck hitchhiking the entire way down, and it was just a sunny highway. It was beautiful, and I had no sense that there would be any problems or anything that could happen. Just so what happened was I wound up having to take a bus because nobody would pick me up after that. But regardless, I found my way out and I didn't have any remorse or fear about it. And I think that I was just really innocent at the time. And that was the experience I had, was I didn't know what to be scared of.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So that's what Nina Simone said, that for her freedom was the no fear. Thank you, Dan. Jennifer, and then Lucy.
Thank you for your talk, and thank you for asking us to think about what it is for us, because it took me a moment, and that it was helpful. So I think becoming one with something, like Diane explained. So I used to be a dancer, and the moment you become one with the dance, then there's a freedom of expression. You know, you're the dance, and the dance is you. And then the other time I would think of is doing my Ashtanga practice, which is a meditative practice. So through the practice, you know, thoughts, emotions, things are coming up, and you're meeting them. And then at the end, your Shavasana, or your letting go, sometimes there's a real letting go, as Diane was talking about letting go, and you're kind of undone. So there's a lot of effort that's put in. And then at the end, sometimes there's the effortless feeling. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand that feeling about dancing. I remember a while ago, Travis gave a talk. He was talking about how he injured his shoulder when he was skiing, and he said something. He said, "Oh, I hope my daughters love something as much as I do. You should really love something in life." And what I love, not that I've ever been a professional dancer or anything, but what I love the most is to dance. Thank you. Oh, Lucy?
I had an experience at the end of college that interestingly turned out to be very similar to my first experience at Tassajara, which was to, you know, chop wood and carry water. I was doing dorm crew, which, you know, kind of speaks to what Les Hearn was saying a few weeks ago about cleaning the toilets. So in doing that, I had absolutely no expectation. Each day was spent, you know, eating little boxes of cereal, reading 100 Years of Solitude, and cleaning toilets. And it was just the most peaceful and quiet time of my entire college career. And I was so happy. I remember being absolutely blissful. And I didn't realize it was because I was getting into kind of this meditative mode of just taking each moment as it came without any expectation or any thought of what was going to happen next. Which is very different, of course, from college, because you're always thinking about what's happening next. I found it very cleansing. Mm-hmm. And the toilets were so clean when I was done.
And what a beautiful book, 100 Years of Solitude.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for sharing that, Lucy. Giuseppe.
We always thank the speaker for the talk. And I also want to thank you for the talk, but very special thank you from me, because this was the talk I wanted to listen to. This was the talk that I was thinking about over the past maybe few weeks. Because I was thinking that sometimes we do not take seriously enough the promise of our practice to end suffering in this life. And and of course, you know, the first noble truth is that life is suffering, and we do need to be rooted into that part. But I think it's also important to have this aspiration and conviction that that is the essence of the promise of the Buddha, and that is still a promise that you won't find many other making that promise to you. In fact, these days, science kind of make that promise to you, you know, that they will fix all your problems and one day be fully happy. But so I also could share some happy moment of my life when I was a small child, when I was a teenager like Dan, or when I was in college or later, when I was later on practicing, or in Tassahara or a Kanando, or but and you know, those are, I think each of us has got those personal moments, and there's that sustains you. It's nice to go back to those feelings if you are in a difficult moment and tired, and it does support. And we were saying with Dawn the other time that sometimes Buddhism is spoken about in terms of emptiness, or in terms of ascetic behavior, or letting go of desires in a way that doesn't seem life supporting. Instead, what you've told us tonight, and the video and the poetry, is life supporting, and the moment of happiness are life supporting. And my concept of freedom over time has evolved, if I can contribute to the discussion. Today, for me, freedom is the ability to find a way to enjoy what's going on, the situation, without having to resort to my also favorite beach. We can share beaches. Or resort to going in a special place, or a special moment. My son being in a good mood, which happens, but also not. But the freedom specifically, which is not necessarily happiness, but it's freedom, is if I have a situation and I start to sense that I don't need to succumb to the situation or drag through myself through it, but I kind of can play with it and find a way to make it also, I'm not saying fun, but making it nice experience where I express myself. So this afternoon I got a call that my friend got stuck with the car the car slid out of the road very badly in a ditch, and we had to tow it, and in the end it was a lot of fun. Okay, thank you. Okay. So question is, your consideration on this, which I also heard from Les in a different way. You know, it's the famous, there is one interview of Les in the internet, and the journalist is asking him, what would you like to do in this moment? What's your favorite activity you would like to be doing in this moment? And Les answered, what's wrong with what we're doing? You know, it's like,
yeah. Thank you, Giuseppe. May you be free each moment.
But it's not easy, huh?
Thank you for sharing. Megan.
Okay, and I unmuted. I think my idea of freedom was having no expectations, which just to be in the moment. And I remember I took this trip to India, and India was very different from the United States. And I remember, like, there was a group of us Americans, and like, they wanted coffee with their dinner, and the waiter was going to give them coffee after dinner. And no matter how much you yelled, "I want coffee now," you were going to get coffee when they're going to give it to you. Or we were on this bus and the bus broke down, and here we are. Something about not having any expectations. And I remember coming back to the United States, and that we were waiting for our luggage, and all our people were saying, "Where's my luggage? Why is it taking so long?" And I thought, wow, I came back from this country where I didn't have any expectations, and it felt very freeing. So that's mine.
Thank you for sharing. Uh-huh. Yeah. let's share a beautiful poem that somebody wrote a while back at Kanondo, in one of his newsletters about flowing with the flow of life. That's also very freeing, as many of you are saying. Vanessa?
Thank you for your lovely presentation, Teresa. I especially enjoyed the Nina Simone interview. That was just so invigorating. I don't know. I could just feel the energy from that woman. Incredible. I think of freedom as I think about conditioned response and conditioning and karmic conditions. And in thinking about freedom, especially recently, I've noticed how important, how foundational practice is, and how I think that really barring a few moments of grace in my life, those kinds of moments when we're on the beach and something descends and there's clarity and there's freedom in that moment. But I think barring those small moments of grace, the only time that freedom can really appear for me is through practice. And understanding, you know, my conditioning and understanding what I'm hardwired to do and what I would be hardwired to do. And I could live my whole life like that. And then suddenly there's a moment when there's a choice. There's really a choice. And it's such a kind of subtle diversion from what feels like the karmic path. And yet the effects of it, you know, the butterfly effect of that tiny little moment of, I don't know, free will, maybe. That's kind of where I go with it. And I think of what you say about being pulled back from the precipice of complete freedom, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really something to go into, huh? Like, it's such a mystery. And I think that there's, when I look in myself, you know, there's a part of me that wouldn't want to maybe go over that precipice of complete freedom, you know, because I love my daughter and I love my incarnation. And there's things that I'm attached to, you know, in this human life, and that somehow I'm happy to live them out. Yeah, it makes me think of the, you know, the bodhisattva vow that somehow you won't take that last step, maybe until you can so you can help everybody else to do it first. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, sometimes I might not have the right understanding, but sometimes I feel that this image of freedom that we have in our practice is almost, I don't know if contrary is the word, but I will use it because I cannot find a better one. Contrary to the human experience, to being a human, right? Because being a human is having all those, as you say, attachments or love, or so being free from all of that can be a bit scary as human being. But yeah, I'm grateful for our practice that teaches us that there is an end to suffering. Thank you. Wei?
Hi. Good evening, everyone. Good evening. Especially Teresa. Thank you for your talk.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this question about freedom. What came to my mind actually changed as I listen to people and think about it, so my response actually changed over time. Initially, I thought freedom is without fear, which is true. You know, we can just do something, being present, and not to have any attachment, not to have to worry about what people think of us, or if I'm doing it right or wrong. And then what came to me is responsible action. It's also part of the answer. You know, freedom is not just do anything without consider any consequence. So I would say responsible action is also part of my answer. So overall, I would say to be able to be present and enjoy what I'm doing, to meet my basic need and do it responsibly. What come to my mind, actually, there's several examples. I can give you two examples. The first example is crossing the street when the light has been red for a long time. Let's say if I'm waiting to cross the street, the light hasn't turned to green or yellow for 5 minutes or longer. You know, maybe something is wrong with the signal. So at the time I would say, oh, even if I have to break the rule, I should just cross. You know, rather than just waiting to have to follow the rules, you know, maybe something is not right, you know, maybe the traffic light, something is wrong. So I think that moment, crossing, it will meet my need. You know, I need to go over there. And it expressed my judgment, able to actually discern, you know, make some action, to take an action. You know, crossing, I'm not hurting anyone. So I cross the street, I complete the action. I don't have to worry about anything. You know, I don't have to worry about hurting someone. So that's one example. The second example is actually, I just came back from swimming. In my apartment complex, I have a swimming pool here. So someone put a sign, pool closed, over a year. You know, that sign has been there since last year. I don't know, last year, you know, someone put the sign there. So I saw some people swimming there last month. I say, oh, you know, maybe I should do what they're doing. So, I mean, even though the sign says no swimming, okay, I shouldn't be doing it. Except I thought, oh, okay, I mean, other people are doing it. Am I hurting anyone? I'm paying my HOA fee, you know, I'm paying.
Mm-hmm.
And so I make a judgment, you know, I take the responsibility. And actually, earlier, I was worrying about, what happened if I'm breaking the rule? But then I changed my mindset. I say, I just enjoy the moment. Forget about, if I break the rule, I mean, I'm not hurting anyone, Right. So I think there's some judgment involved. Well, anyway, that's my input. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Wei. You are a good guest on the planet. Nick.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Nick.
As I hear everyone talk about freedom, it almost just sounds like there's this element of nostalgia to it. Like, this one time I remember being free. And even listening to that excerpt that you shared about Nina Simone, that even hers was very temporary. It's just when she's on stage. How do we live in a permanent state of freedom? Or is it even possible in this current incarnation that all of us share as humans?
Thank you. We have to, I guess, actualize. Is that the right word to say? If we become Buddhas, if we actualize our Buddhahood, right? If we are free from suffering, wouldn't we be free? If we do what the Bahia Sutra says, no self. Understanding that, not even understanding it, knowing it, as Don says. I guess that would be the answer to your question. Then we would be free. What do you think?
I agree with what you're saying, but I don't necessarily know if it's possible.
Well, we have the example of the Buddha. He was just a man, like all of us. And he showed that it's possible. Well, a man or a woman, of course.
Since you did reference my question from a couple of weeks ago about leaving home, the Buddha did leave home, and he had a lot more to leave than any of us do. I mean, we're not royalty. We don't have palaces with multiple beautiful wives. And I mean, I have a lot less than Shakyamuni did. And I can't even leave what little I have right now. And I mean, even Vanessa said earlier, I love being a parent. I love my daughter. I can't leave it. Even Diane said, I'm attached to a lot of things I can't leave. So is it possible, given the way we lead our lives right now? Because for me, I feel like it might not be. And the best freedom that at least I've been able to experience so far is just these little temporary things that even Nina Simone says when I'm on stage. It just seems it has to be very, very specific conditions. And at the best, maybe I can get glimpses of it.
Yeah. So,
I don't know. That's where my experience is just right now.
Yes. What a beautiful profession to have. I was thinking about musicians when I was, preparing for the talk, and about my father, who was also a musician. I thought, he must have experienced freedom when he was playing. I don't know about your question about what you're saying about leaving what we have and all that. Well, I guess it takes determination. Without that, I wouldn't know how to do it.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you. Hi, Jaya.
Hi, Teresa. I'm just gonna
Where are you hiding?
I'm in the dark here, so I'm trying. Okay, here I am. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Thank you for being here tonight. It's very late for you.
It's early for you too.
Yeah. So
thank you so much for your talk and yeah, I've struggled. His question is very relevant because I feel like I've struggled with this, how to be free. And you cited Krishnamurti at the end, who is just, you know, somebody I got me on the path when I was like 17, I think. And I remember reading so much that he wrote and, you know, trying to, one of the things he said was to be in a constant state of awareness, and that was freeing. And so I would walk, and just every time I would walk, I would try to look at the leaves as an anchor to try to be aware. And that was the state of freedom that I thought he was alluding to, just that state of awareness of being in the moment and really experiencing that. So I would walk, I would try to see leaves, and just every time I saw a leaf, I would try to bring myself to be notice the leaf. And I realized after a time that it was very difficult to do. So I can relate to Nick's question, but how it's very difficult to do that. And I think Vanessa said about the practice bringing us back. I think that's the only way I've also realized that I can do this, that I can be free, is in those moments when you're sitting. Because I think part of it is just being by yourself. And it's so hard to be by yourself. We don't have that because we're always with people and with things and with so many, if not with people and things, is then it's our mind things. And so the only time I find myself being free in a more continuous state is if I'm sitting for long periods, that too, not even short periods, because then it comes and goes. But I hear Nick's question and I kind of feel that myself. So just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Jaya.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I guess by sitting zazen, we strengthen that muscle, the muscle of awareness. I read this quote by Suzuki Roshi. He said, "When we die, we go to the same place that we go when we sit zazen." I said, "Oh, that's so beautiful." Thank you.
Risa, could you say that again? My internet just cut out just when you started saying it, and I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, he said that when we die, we go to the same place that we go when we sit zazen.
Any more questions for Teresa? Well, thank you for your talk, Teresa.
Thank you for being here tonight.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.